then, welcome to episode 18 of season 9 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through Live Free or Die Hard and A Good Day to Die Hard 5 minutes at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me to finish off his stint this season is Jim O'Kane of the upcoming Captain America Minute. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Rob. It's always fun being on these shows because I never know what I'm going to say when I'm doing this. And I often get through without being totally embarrassed by my lack of knowledge. But thank you.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. You see, I look at it from the perspective that, you know, I always prepare, but, you know, you don't always have to stay on the page. You know, that's
yeah. What it comes down to. We usually go right into the weeds immediately, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. There's no problem with that. So episode 18 begins with Warlock really showing that he understands a lot, and ends with John assuring Farrell. So yesterday we barged in on the Warlock's command center, and you know, at the end of yesterday's segment, he basically decided to explain everything that's going on with Thomas Gabriel. Farrell wasn't sure that Warlock knew what he had done for Gabriel, but he did. And he goes, "I know, dude. You wrote a mutating algorithmic security code that's probably being used by Thomas Gabriel right now." So, again, it goes back to what we were saying the other day that, you know, it's integral that what Farrell, the program that he wrote, is the one that is definitely needed the most. And the response is, "No, we know that. Yes. Can you tell us what he's using it for?" "I don't know. I've been trying to figure that out. Here, look. The only security system in the country that I can find currently employing that particular template is the Social Security Administration. Okay? But they don't even use it in that main facility. Look, they use it in this building over here in Woodlawn." So one of the things is that you know, I like the fact that they basically show us that what Farrell created wasn't specifically for the Social Security Administration. You know, it's something that Gabriel knew how to use to get in there. You know, it's not like he said, "Okay, I want," you know, I guess from Gabriel's perspective, you know, he's keeping things on the QT by basically telling, you know, hiring people to create programs without them knowing where that program is going to be used. You know, so because I would think that it would be easier if someone were to say to you, "Okay, you know, this is what I want you to get into. So you have to create something for this." He had to, I guess, explain to them the various security levels of what he needs to get through. Which seems a little more complicated, but again, these are top hackers, I guess. I don't know.
It's give me a moment. I can remember H.H. Holmes. It's the fellow that is the, I guess, the star, the antagonist, the villain in the Eric Larson book, The Devil in the White City. H.H. Holmes was a serial killer who built a hotel. It was set in the Chicago, the Columbian Exposition in 1893. He built a hotel in Chicago and would take different people into the hotel as tenants and murder them. But the idea behind it was, when he hired carpenters and plumbers and all the different people and bricklayers and all the different people that were building this hotel, he gave them individual plans, but didn't tell them what the whole building would look like, and it turned into like a series of dungeons. But none of the people that were working on it ever knew that's what they were building. They thought they were building a hotel.
Wow!
So I'm thinking this is a kind of a callback to The Devil in the White City.
Wow, that sounds like it. You know, and it makes sense with the way that they were doing this. Now, what's really cool is that when Warlock is showing the information. So we see like the whole all the windows that are open on this computer, and there's one in the background that says dog pile, and then it says under all the best search engines piled into one. Have you ever heard of that
Yeah, that was a while ago. It would go out. I used it, gosh, the late 2000s, I think. And it was an aggregator of, like, it would take Google and Yahoo and Ask Jeeves and all the other ones and give you lists of things by relevance. But that's a haven't heard that one in a long time.
I've never even heard of it. This is the first time I had ever heard of it, and I went and looked it up. And you're right. I mean, it's a search engine that's been around since 1996, and it still works. It's still being used. It's not like Ask Jeeves that is gone.
Yeah.
Wow. And yeah, it takes as you said, it takes Google and Yahoo and Bing and other popular search engines and puts them all together. For the But it's interesting that they would have this here.
Could be product placement at the time. I mean, those is after the dot-com bubble burst, but maybe they were trying to get back in and saying, hey, if we show that as, this guy's using this as his default search engine, maybe somebody will click on Dogpile for 3 seconds on the screen.
Yeah, exactly. Well, again, they knew that we were going to be doing this.
Yeah,
So
of course. Yeah.
it was planned.
Very prescient. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So it's just very cool the way that they have that just lying in the background, and you can find it if you're paying attention like we are.
Yeah, and I love that that logo of the National Data Administration.
Yes.
Interesting. An interesting department.
And again, it makes you wonder, how does Warlock know all this?
Well, he must be using Dogpile.
I'm asking a serious question. Like,
Oh,
how do we think that Warlock is able to get all this information?
I'm guessing that he follows persons of interest or follows people that he knows, and he knows Justin Long's character, and he may be, he may have tracers on him that come up with, like bots out there searching the internet anytime something new happens, and in places where there's not normally information that's public, because he seems to have a lot of different, rather esoteric things that he's hacked.
Right.
I mean, the National Data Administration for one, and he's in the middle of the screen there. He's running an algorithmic security code crack, so he's trying to burrow into other federal systems and maybe state systems to follow his people of interest.
It wouldn't it be really great if Warlock is actually the mastermind behind everything?
Ooh.
He's the one who set up Gabriel.
Yeah, he's just the patsy for it.
That's right. It's all possible.
It is, it could happen.
And what then they continue looking at the screen, and what the hell? I know, right? And John looks at them and goes, right, what? What the hell are you guys talking about? The power consumption is off the charts. Hot. It's hot. It's on fire. Why would there be chilling towers there? That's what I thought. And John looks to him and says, hello? What's a chilling tower? And Farrell looks to him and goes, see what I've been dealing with? And he turns to him and goes, large server farms generate a lot of heat and need to be cooled. But why there? Tell you what, guys, I don't know what's in that building, but I assure you it's not social security numbers. So it's great the way that this conversation is going and stuff like that. And because John McClane is the guy that in every movie they have some sort of connection to technology of how he is totally out of date and a technophobe and all that stuff. And when it comes to this, he's okay with it. He wants them to try and explain it to him, and they're not necessarily explaining it in layman's terms.
Yeah, he's well. I mean, somebody, there's some way they've got to get the exposition to get out somehow. So it's like he's the organizing sensibility, and I think it's always weird that the Hans Grubers, the versions of Hans Grubers in this world always have a hacker on their side who wears glasses and stares at a screen. which, you know, right from the get-go, it's
Isn't that
so
what you
he's,
need in order to dominate the world?
yeah, a guy in glasses with a keyboard.
Yeah. I mean that actually makes sense. I mean, doesn't James Bond has Q, so
Yeah.
why shouldn't the
Yeah,
bad guys have their own Q
only.
also?
Although it's reversed here because in the Bond movies, Q's the old guy who knows everything, and here it's a bunch of boomers running around trying to asking young people, what does this mean? What is that? So it's
Well,
a little reverse, slight reverse.
okay, but then if you look at the latest versions of James Bond, it is the opposite. It's a young guy.
That's true. That is true. Yeah.
And Bond is the older one. So, there's
Yeah,
some sort of.
it ended with Cleese, I guess. John Cleese was our last older Q.
Well, right. Now we have the younger Q.
Yeah.
Who is being very helpful.
Yeah, and now as we are entering the post-Craig era, which people who are listening to this years from now already know, it's like, what's the next Q gonna be like? So it could. Q might be an AI at that point.
It might make sense to do that. You never know. But we have to
Oh.
wait and see when they're going to eventually, do another James Bond.
Yeah.
Then we can worry about who's
Yeah.
going to be Q.
Yes. Yeah. The lighting in that. I'm impressed by the number of louvers in this truck. There's a giant vent that's. It looks like something that if you were the size of, say, a dachshund, if you were walking by an air vent in the bad of bad guy lairs, this looks like it's a very tiny room with really big vents.
Well, isn't that what you need?
Yeah, you do need some. I mean, you need a breeze, but this is like a wind tunnel. I can't imagine trying to hear over the noise of the blowers in that place.
That's true also. But I this is not the first time they've done this in this movie, but I love the way that they will focus in on a computer screen, and then when they pull back, we're in a different place of someone else who's looking at a similar screen.
Yeah.
And Trey now knows that there has been a connection breach. You'd think that Warlock would have been a little smarter than to, that he wouldn't have a way of hiding himself here.
Yeah, he'd be a little bit more stealthy, especially since he's like, apparently the world's greatest hacker.
Well, apparently Trey is a little better.
Yeah.
At this point, Trey then goes, "I got a red flag over here. Someone's hacking into Woodlawn," and he goes, "honing in on the host server right now." And then, he ends up seeing who it is, and he goes, "Oh, it's Frederick Kalutis," which we now know who that is. You'd think that he would have also have his IP address under a different name,
Yeah,
if he's
just
very smart.
something simpler, yeah, using
And something not, I mean, as we talked about yesterday, Kalutis is not a very common name. You should use a more common name.
Yeah, use the word default or something. You can just get
Yeah, I mean, a few weeks ago when we saw the divorce agreement between John and Holly on the screen, so I think the names of their lawyers were like Smith and Jones or something like that, What's really cool is they're able to hack into Warlock's video,
Yeah.
and they get it to spin around and take a picture of them. And then we can, they're able to see that it's McLean and Warlock and Farrell all together. Gabriel goes, "Let's have a look at him, that fat bastard," and then he goes, "McLean," and then he turns around and says, "Where's his daughter?" And then Casper responds and goes, "We just got a trace on her cell." He goes, "You're gonna love this." Now we get a shot on the screen of where she is. Okay. First of all, before we even get there, when they're doing the search on Lucy Gennaro, the trace, it says that she's from San Francisco. It goes back to something we talked about a few weeks ago, that Nakatomi's in LA. So why is she now living in San, why is Holly in San Francisco, and why is she in San, on the stuff they showed us on the screen about Holly, it was also San Francisco. So I guess they had to move the company to San Francisco because they didn't have a building anymore or something.
Nobody wanted to work in that plaza. And I was thinking, I was as I was watching this when they were showing, they're tracking her down, and they're showing her holding on to, I don't know what version of Nokia that is, but I was thinking this is like the last gasp of Nokia dominance. So it's like they had Nokia here because everybody knew Nokia, and this is like their new. This must have been like their latest version of Nokia, but this was the same year that the iPhone came out.
Right. Now, what I find really cool is that, did you look at the map of where they find her?
Yeah, it's got like a it shows you the tracing of her, and it has all the different locations, like the satellite location.
Okay. Do you have any idea what city she's in?
I don't know.
I mean, theoretically, she should be in Camden, right? That's where. That's where. Okay,
Geyser Way East.
so I actually looked into this because I saw it says Otterbein. Okay, so I did a little bit of a search, and this is actually Baltimore. So Lucy Gennaro is somehow in Baltimore. The gray space in the middle of the screen, that's Camden Yards.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay, yeah, this is the surprise you were talking about earlier this week.
Yes, because you can see Martin Luther King Boulevard. I actually found like modern maps showing exactly where she is and like all the streets, and it matches up with what they have here. Again, this is very Baltimore heavy, but
Wow.
people they didn't really do much. They didn't hide it well enough. The fact that Lucy Gennaro is somehow now in Baltimore, which it helps with the plot.
Yeah, but you would have had to jump on the Acela or something and get down. But before the power went out too.
Seriously.
Wow. I'm just amazed that she's in an elevator with no connectivity, but these people can reach into the elevator with some kind of, I guess they've hardwired the elevator actions, all the controls for the elevator somehow, with the power off, right? I mean, we're still
Yeah, of
dealing with
course.
the powers off.
Yeah, of course. But maybe they were able to
So
connect to the the satellites in order to get that done.
yeah.
Like with everything else, yeah. So this area of Baltimore that's known as Otterbein, it's a historic district in Baltimore. And it has historic row houses, and it's within walking distance to the Inner Harbor, and it's located between Hanover and Sharp Streets, and between Barr and Henrietta Streets, and it's named for the old Otterbein Church, which is located immediately north of the neighborhood.
So it has row houses as well as the 20-story building that's being shown in the clip where it shows you where the elevator is.
Yes, of course. And also, and also it's probably relatively close to where all of these guys are.
Yeah,
So.
it's very impressive. But I just was wondering how they got that 20-story building past the Historic Preservation Society of Baltimore with
Well,
all the
yeah,
row
it's not,
houses.
no, the Otterbein neighborhood is on the other side of Camden Yard. So I don't know the name of
Okay.
the area that she's in. So, we can't completely go there. But it's just very interesting that as you said, they're able to still track her.
Yeah, I mean, apparently the computers in the building are more important than running the elevators for where people might be trapped in elevators.
That's true, and also the you know it goes to show that even if there's no power, your SIM card still works, and they can find it.
Yes. Wow.
So yeah, Casper is quite happy that they're able to find her there, and then at this point, Gabriel wants a little bit of a closer look. We first of all we see that it's 2:25 a.m. according to her according to her cell phone, her Nokia. Because we know it's dark, so it can't be 2:25 p.m. And she's got no service even for 911. But as you said, great product placement for this old lady. At this point, Gabriel is very interested in figuring out, what to do, and he knows that he can turn back on the emergency power. So it's good that they turned off the power everywhere, but he's still able to pick and choose what he wants to turn back on.
Yeah,
So
it's
it's impressive. It means he really thought about this whole thing.
yeah, he's a really clever hacker.
Yes.
I did like the nod to Galaxy Quest, Justin Long's movie, where McClane puts his hand over the camera to block the view for
Yes.
his of his group of hackers with their group of hackers, and Thomas tells him that if you put your hand over the camera, you're still not going to block the microphone. It was a lot like the Tim Allen moving his thumb across the neck
Yes.
towards Sigourney Weaver, and she's like, "Oh, we don't. I don't know how to work these things. I don't know how to turn off the sound."
And what I like though is that not only is Gabriel able to control the Warlock's camera, but he's also able to talk to them through their computer, and say, "Freddy," and he goes, "What? What the hell are you doing dicking around inside my network?" And he goes, "McClane, I thought I killed you already." Because I get that sometimes. And then John tries to whisper to them, "You think you can find a track of where he is? 2 minutes." And then Gabriel goes, "Detective, covering the camera with your hand does not turn off the microphone." I mean that this scene, I know that you said that it reminds you of Galaxy Quest, but it reminds me actually more of Star Trek 2.
Oh yeah,
When
where Khan, yeah,
testing with Khan,
Khan
when
doesn't know how things work. He the ultimate boomer.
that's right. where he's telling them about the turning off the code, on the Reliant, and that type of thing. So
Yeah.
just very cool. The way that he's like, he turns his back around. He says, "Yeah, we're gonna send it to you right away." That type of thing. But apparently Gabriel is a little smarter than Khan when it comes to modern
Yeah.
technology. I guess you could say.
Would that scene that you were talking about in Khan, would you consider that the earliest form of a hack on in a movie that relied on a hack?
Wow, that's a great question.
I mean, I think about like War Games was about a
War Games, but
hacker, but
War Games was in 83, and the Wrath of Khan came out in
yeah,
82. So,
that's
from
right,
a different
yeah.
perspective,
So it's
I wouldn't be surprised if there is some sort of movie that deals with some sort of computer hacker earlier. I mean, even Superman 3 came out in 83.
yeah.
So,
Yeah, so Richard Pryor
that's
doesn't count,
Richard Pryor.
yeah.
That's right. Just stealing one penny each time, or a tenth of a penny, or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But somewhere in the back of my mind, I believe that I've seen some movie from the 60s or 70s that deal with some sort of what
I mean,
hack I'm not seeing.
I remember Colossus the Forbin Project, where they were trying to defeat a supercomputer by putting in fake nu the basically it was a story about an AI that was given control of all the nuclear missiles. And the AI decided it was going to take over the world. And so what the humans were doing was they were replacing every missile with a dummy warhead. And Colossus, the AI, had figured it out and let them do that. And then he punished them by setting off a nuclear weapon. But that was kind of like a hack that failed. But thinking about a hack that worked, I don't know. We'll leave that one for the listeners to write
Well,
in and
I just
mention.
did a quick search, in ChatGPT. The answer that it gives me is the earliest movie about computer hacking is War Games. But again, we've just disproved that by,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
you
So
know. But
sorry,
again,
GPT, you don't win on that one.
maybe they're looking at it from perspective of a movie that's the plot.
Yeah.
This isn't the plot. I mean, it also tells me that in Tron, there's an idea of a hack. And Tron is 82. So then the question remains, which one came out earlier in 1982?
Yeah. I think he called them hackers, but I don't know if there's actual hacking going on
Okay, well, what
in.
about, okay, here's another thing that says here, the Italian job in 1969, where they hacked a traffic light system.
Okay, yeah, that would make sense. Yeah. Now I'm trying to think if there's Bond movies where they did hacking. Oh yeah, Doctor No. They were putting in no wait, was it Doctor No? No, it was Live and Let Die in 1973, where they had a cassette tape that Bond had to put in to send the wrong information, and they had swapped out. No, that wasn't, that was Diamonds Are Forever. Diamonds Are Forever with Jill St. John. Jill St. John had to switch out a data tape, a data cassette to stop a space laser. So yeah, I'd go with Diamonds Are Forever, but there's got to be some other ones. Okay, this is gonna have me laying awake at night thinking about earliest hacks. There might be something in the 50s even. Have to ponder that some
Quite
more.
possibly, quite possibly. Okay, well, we've got it back to 1969, so we're already,
Yeah. We're
we're 13
back
years
there, yeah.
earlier than we thought
Yeah.
at the beginning of this conversation. So
Yeah,
that.
okay. Start looking at Edison movies and see.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you get some.
The Great Train Robbery had a hack somewhere in there, yeah.
Well, no, I was thinking more about movies by oh, what's his name? The French guy.
Buñuel? No, I let's see, Truffaut?
No. The French guy from the turn of the century.
Oh, Méliès,
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 Méliès, Méliès.
Georges Méliès. Yeah, he
I
may have
wouldn't.
something.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, well, we'll work on that. But anyway, I'm sure your listeners will be screaming at their speakers or listen, their earbuds going, no, you idiots, it's this. So please write in and let us know what you've seen that we've missed.
That's right. And then John says, I'm not as smart as you guys at all this computer, but hey, I'm still alive. And I mean, you've got to be running out of bad guys by now, right?
They've run out of Grubers.
Honestly, you can tell me. I mean, how does that work? You got some kind of service or something? Some kind of 800 number, 1-800 henchman, which henchman is eight digits instead of seven, but okay. Oh, you know what? I bet you're still on hold with, can I get another dead Asian hooker bitch over here right now?
Poor Maggie
But
Q.
serious, all that kicking aside, that skinny little ninja chick, she was smoking hot. I knew one of those is going to be real hard to come by, right? Now, John's getting very personal here. And then Gabriel just says to him with a straight face, you're very impressed with yourself, aren't you? He goes, I have my moments. Yeah. Well, is this one of them? And then, we hear a phone ringing. And then we see Lucy on the video answering, going, hello? He goes, yes, this is emergency services calling. Oh, God, thank you. And John goes, can she hear me? He goes, my name is Lucy Gennaro. I've been stuck in here for hours. I've been trying to call. And John goes, hey. Did you hear this? Lucy, hang up that phone. Yes. Calm down, miss. Now, I love the way that Die Hard movies must have a point where the bad guy pretends to be somebody else. Yeah, this is the fourth time that we've gotten this. And then he says, we know exactly where you are. Everything is going to be all right. Yeah, we know that you're in Baltimore somehow. I don't know. he basically said, oh, it's going to be so much easier to pick you up if you're in Baltimore. Because, like, how are they going to pick her up if she's in Camden?
Yeah. Drive up 95 and make a left. Yeah.
Yeah, but how many goons do they have ready right now? That's the whole thing.
Yeah, at 2:30 in the morning.
In Camden.
Yeah. It's a triple time.
Yeah, and then John screams, Lucy, hang up the phone. And then he turns and goes, please, John, I'm trying to have a conversation. And then he says to her, we've been overloaded tonight, as you may imagine, but I assure you, we're going to get you out of there, even if I have to come down there and get you myself. She says, thank you. In the meantime, Miss Gennaro, is there anyone that you would like us to contact for you? He goes, yeah, my dad. His name is John McClane. He's a New York City cop. Well, we'll find him. Just hang in there, miss. We'll get to you very soon. Oh, thank you.
You'd think she would have just read him off her dad's phone number.
Seriously. And then Gabriel then says to John, well, that's a great girl you got there. Can't wait to meet her. What's the matter? Cat got your tongue? Come on, John. Make a joke. Say something funny. And then Warlock, shows him that he's able to figure out how to, get him to Woodlawn. And he, like, whistles to John. And then at this point, John is ready to try and figure this all out. And now that he knows how to get to Woodlawn.
Yeah, so it's...
It's very funny.
His
also
job,
yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. The idea that, yeah. I mean, his to-do list is go kill this guy and go pick up my daughter. So that, yeah, I think he's forgotten all about Justin Lawns. What he's got to do,
Yeah.
He's off the table now. He's like, no, I don't need to pick you up. It's this guy that was. It's the big threat.
That's right. Now, I mean, if you look at the video quality on the remote webcam, it's not that great. But it also says on it unknown IP address. Now, how do you hack into something without knowing the IP address?
I have no idea unless he's sending out some. He's using some other base the Mac ID maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just a little strange. Again,
it's hacker stuff.
It's hacker stuff. That's right. Nobody's expecting us to be looking into stuff. So it's fine.
Yeah.
And John has basically had enough, and now that he knows where Woodlawn is, so he's ready to go figure that all out.
Yeah, and so he's going to get into a six. He's getting into a 66 Lincoln, is that right, with suicide doors?
That's what it looks like. But my question then is, whose car is that? Like, where did he get the keys? Is it Warlock's car, and he gave him the keys? Later on, Warlock comes back, but it's not like he says, "Okay, where's my car?"
Yeah, I'm thinking it's Mrs. Kudlis, and she just left the keys on the little. She has one of those little multiple peg things by the back door, so it's like, oh, here's a key to a Lincoln.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't even think about it from that perspective. That actually could work.
Yeah, it's what his mom would likely keep them. Like there's, if it's like any other Maryland house, it probably has like a little mud. Well, where they were knocking on the door the other day when we saw it with the decal that had been scraped off the window. That's
right.
Like a little mud room. So she probably has the keys hanging right inside the door there.
Yeah.
I just want to know, where is it parked in that teeny tiny backyard?
Seriously. And don't they have to open up the gate in order to leave it to go out? And
yeah,
when
and then drive
the
around
helicopter?
Yeah, they're gonna have to drive around the helicopter to get out of the driveway.
Exactly. And Farrell runs after him and goes, "Where are you going? What? Where are you going? Hey." And goes, "Hold up! Where are you going? What are you gonna do? What do you think I'm gonna do? I'm gonna go kill this guy and get my daughter." But she could be anywhere. You know, again, they don't know she's in Baltimore. Listen to me. It's going to get messy. You should just stay here. Hey, I'm doing you a favor. I wouldn't bet on me, all right? I'll take it from here. And you know, he's not willing to let him go, which makes you wonder why Farrell wants to go with him at this point. Maybe he just realizes that it's safest for him to be with John. You know, that anyone else
Yeah,
that he could be with,
he.
you know, might cause more problems for him.
Yeah, or you wind up being arrested. I would love to cut this movie together with Hairspray. Just it looks like the same neighborhood, and just have Tracy Turnblad doing "Good Morning Baltimore" down the street while he's getting in the car and he's trying to back out. But well, it's just someday AI will accomplish that kind of stuff.
It's very possible. You never know. But I mean, there's you also have all of the Barry Levinson, you know, Baltimore trilogy.
Yeah, diner. Yeah.
Yeah, those are also fun movies to watch. And that's how this segment ends. These 5 minutes. So, Jim, did you have anything else you want to say about the these minutes?
Actually, just summing up my thoughts about the movie. I was surprised when I first saw the movie. I didn't, you know, like I said, I didn't see it in the theater. I saw it on TV with commercials. But what I was surprised at was how, even though it's getting, they're kind of running the plot a little bit thin, it still is a compelling film 4 episodes into into the franchise, that they can still generate some interest in things. And I think the way they do it is they do great casting. Everybody in the cast does their job quite well. The bad guy does a good job,
Even Mr. Mrs. Kalutis.
and even Mrs. Kalutis does a good job. You feel like it's all reasonable in unreasonable situations. I think Lucy's a little bit naive for someone who's the daughter of John McClane. Although, you know, this all the different
But she's also the daughter
kid
of Holly Gennaro.
Holly. Yeah, and I guess they're just damsels in distress are very prevalent in the McClane slash Gennaro household.
It's well, no, it's the Gennaro household until they're rescued, and then they switch their name back to McClane.
Yeah. As always, it's as is tradition.
Yeah, of course. Well, it's tradition
Yeah,
in the
well,
McClane family.
yeah.
What would you expect anything different?
No, this is the way of the world. I mean, when
Exactly.
you walk into a Die Hard movie, you know what you're gonna get.
That
It's
is
lots
true.
of and it gets there's I was just pondering this. There's a song from the 60s called, it's an instrumental, but it's a pop hit, and it's called "A Walk in the Black Forest," and it's a piano tune, and the first several verses of it are rather intricate, complicated chords that play the theme. And when you get to the last verse, the player, Horst Jankowski, is the composer as well as the performer. He doesn't play as many notes. He just plays big chords for the last theme. And I think that's what this is. They've gotten rid of the subtleties. It's mostly all that's left in the Die Hard movies are the big chords. You still enjoy the big chords, but it's not as complicated as it used to be.
Right.
So I think this is the Walk in the Black Forest of movie making.
Very cool. All right. So today's segment is a game.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And the game is called 6 Degrees of Bruce Willis.
Okay.
Okay. So the idea here is very simple. I'm assuming you're familiar with the idea of 6 Degrees of Kevin Bacon, where you can
Yes.
connect any actor to Kevin Bacon within 6 moves. So we're going to do that with Bruce Willis. So I will give you the name of an actor, and you have to try to connect them to Bruce Willis. The same.
Oh
The same.
boy.
All right. So
All right.
your first one is George Kennedy.
Oh, we're going to airport. Okay, let me think about this. Let's see, George Kennedy to Burt Lancaster in airport. Burt Lancaster in airport to Field of Dreams, which gets me to Kevin Costner. Now, has Kevin Costner ever been in a Bruce Willis movie? No. Kevin Costner was in a movie with Scott Glenn, which was Silverado. And then Silver, and then that would connect me to Ed Harris in The Right Stuff. Ed Harris in The Right Stuff connects me to Tom Hanks, which Tom Hanks was in a Tom Hanks was in a Bruce Willis movie, right? Am I wrong about this?
They were never in a movie together.
No. Oh, okay. No, I'm thinking of Blind Date and Bachelor Party. That's where the crossover was. So I can get him to, if I can get to Ed Harris, then Ed Harris, wait, Ed Harris in The Abyss connects me to Gina Davis. And Gina Davis was in The Kid, which was starring Bruce Willis. So it's Bruce Willis, Gina Davis. Let me follow that backwards. Bruce Willis, Gina Davis, Ed Harris, Scott Glenn, Burt Lancaster, and then George Kennedy. Okay, sorry that took forever. I was going down too many.
I will now give you two much shorter routes. Okay.
Okay.
George Kennedy was in The Naked Gun with
Right.
I found actually two different people that were there that connect. You have Lawrence Tierney.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Who was in Armageddon with Bruce Willis?
Right, that's right.
You can also use Dr. Joyce Brothers, who was in National Lampoon's Loaded Weapon with Bruce Willis.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
Yes. Okay.
Alternatively, you can also do George Kennedy was in Charade with Coburn,
Oh, yeah.
and
Right, or you could
James Coburn was in Hudson Hawk with Bruce Willis. So you can get there in two.
You get there in two. It's just I'm thinking you could also go George Kennedy to Paul Newman in Cool Hand Luke, and if you go to Paul Newman, there's got to be somebody that connects Paul Newman
Paul
to
Newman was
Bruce
in
in two
Nobody's Fool with Bruce Willis.
with Bruce Willis. Okay, there we go.
Yeah, if you've never seen that movie, it's a great movie.
I was
Have you ever seen Nobody's Fool?
No, I have not seen it.
It's from 1994. Yeah, I believe it was the last time that Newman was nominated for Best Actor. But
Wow.
you should check that out if you get a chance. Yeah, the next one for you is Chris Cooper.
Chris Cooper, okay. Oh, Chris Cooper to Chris Ellis. Chris Ellis is in this movie.
Okay, there you go. What movie was Chris Cooper in with Chris Ellis?
Oh, sorry, a little show called October Sky.
Yeah, I know the
They
answer.
should make a movies by minutes about that. Or oh wait, they did make a movies by minutes
All
about
right.
October Sky. It's called October Sky Minute.
There you go. With Homer Hickam
Yeah.
and with Jim O'Kane. That's
Yeah, and Chris Cooper.
right. So the one that I found was Chris Cooper was in American Beauty with Annette Bening, who was in The Siege with Bruce Willis.
Okay.
But
Well, Chris Ellis was the principal in October Sky.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Okay. Your next one is Clint Howard.
Clint Howard. Okay. Clint Howard was in Apollo 13. Tom Hanks was in Apollo 13. Tom Hanks was in That Thing You Do with Liv Tyler. Liv Tyler was in Armageddon.
Great. Okay. I found two slightly shorter connections, but that's a great one. Clint Howard was in Far and Away with Colm Meaney, and Colm Meaney was in Die Hard
Wow.
2.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And Clint Howard was in Apollo 13 with Christian Clemenson, who was also in Armageddon.
Wow. Okay, that's epic.
Okay. The next one for you is your good friend Billy Campbell.
Billy Campbell. Okay. Let's see. Okay.
Yeah.
Billy Campbell was in The Rocketeer with Jennifer Connelly. Jennifer Connelly was in a movie with David Bowie called
Labyrinth.
Labyrinth. David Bowie was in Into the Night, which had everybody in it. Michelle, no, wait, Michelle Pfeiffer. Yeah, Michelle Pfeiffer is.
She was in a movie with.
Oh, I can't think of it. I'm blanking.
The Story of Us.
Why?
Bruce Willis.
Oh, The Story of Us. Duh. Ah, idiot. Okay, there we go.
Okay. The one I found is Billy Campbell was in Gettysburg with Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels was in Looper with Bruce Willis.
With Bruce Willis, that's right. Okay.
Okay. The next one for you, Dean Martin.
Dean Martin was in an Airport with, I wonder if I could go through Star Wars on this. Let me think about this. Dean Martin was in Airport with Burt Lancaster. Burt Lancaster was in Field of Dreams with James Earl Jones. James Earl Jones was Darth Vader with his daughter, Carrie Fisher. Carrie Fisher was in, this might be a big mistake to go down. Was in Harry, oh, was in When Harry Met Sally. She was Meg Ryan's friend in,
yeah, of course,
When Harry Met Sally.
We've talked about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think. So, so that you get to when
the hours or so. Yeah.
Yeah, you get to When Harry Met Sally, Tom Hanks to Apollo 13, Apollo 13 to Chris Ellis, and then on to Bruce Willis.
Okay. So Dean Martin was in Cannonball Run 2 with Abe Vigoda.
Ooh, that's a good one. Oh yeah, okay, yeah.
And what movie was Abe Vigoda in with Bruce Willis? Or with the voice of Bruce Willis?
Oh,
Look Who's Talking.
Oh yeah, of course.
Okay.
The voice of Bruce Willis. Wow.
And your final one, which I'm sure you're looking forward to.
You're welcome, audience. Yeah.
is James Earl Jones. It's interesting that you kept going to him, even though
Okay.
You know, I had him already set up for yours.
Well, let me try. I want to try the Costner route. So, let's see. James Earl Jones to Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. Kevin Costner to who can I do in JFK? There's got to be a way to get. It's all the everybody that's in all the Oliver Stone movies that would be in it. How about Gary? Oh, that's it. Okay. James Earl Jones is with Kevin Costner in Field of Dreams. Kevin Costner is in JFK with Gary Oldman. Gary Oldman is in Bruce Willis's Fifth Element.
Okay, that is a great way to get there. The ones that I found are, you have James Earl Jones was in Field of Dreams with Timothy Busfield, who was in Striking with Bruce Willis.
Yeah.
In Field of Dreams, you also have Frank Wally, who was in Pulp Fiction with Bruce Willis. And then my personal favorite of these three is James Earl Jones was in Hunt for Red October with Fred Thompson, who was in Die Hard 2.
That's right, yeah. Excellent.
Okay. Well, thank you for being a good supporter for playing.
Thank you for letting me use all my neurons. Once I was just starting to warm up the IMDb part of my head, but that worked out. But much appreciated.
No problem. Okay, and now we will play the final game of State Your Motto.
Oh dear. Okay.
And
I'm ready.
We will be. I have chosen for this one our joint state that both of us have connections to is New Jersey. Okay. So your three choices are A, ever upward, B, liberty and prosperity, or C, union, justice, and confidence.
I know this one because we used to have the state flag of New Jersey in my classroom when I was in like the kindergarten. And the two women that are surrounding the state seal were liberty and prosperity. So it's liberty and prosperity.
Excellent. See? Very nicely done.
Okay. Ending on a win. Thank you.
You always end on a win, Jim.
I try.
Yeah. All right. So, Jim, would you like to one more time to tell people where they can find you?
Okay, well, if you haven't listened to all of my previous podcasts, you can find them really easy to find. JimOkane.com, JimOkane. Leave off the apostrophe for extra savings. And if you are listening to this sometime before December 1st, 2025, mark your calendar for December 1st, 2025, because that's when we start our new one, the Captain America Minute, where we talk with the director Joe Johnston about his adventure in the MCU. So join us there. If it's after December 1st, 2025, well, go back and find us. We're available probably everywhere you're hearing Movie Rob's podcasts as well. So check us out.
All right. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. If you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So, Jim, thank you very much for joining me these past few days.
Always a pleasure.
I hope you didn't suffer too much through that game.
No. It's okay. My brain, I can feel my brain healing even as we're speaking.
I'm very happy to hear that. I will be back tomorrow with a new guest, but until then, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Some folks are born made to wave the flag. Oh, they're red, white, and blue, yeah. But it ain't me. It ain't me. I ain't no fortunate one.